The world record is for the longest goal scored ever.
Just having breakfast like 9 o'clock in the morning, and who walks in? Of course, Zlatan. So he sits next to me, and the first thing he says, "You remember when I scored against you, don't you?" Okay. I wasn't planning on going to Chelsea. One of my best memories ever was winning the Premier League title.
Really?
And not playing that many games.
You must have done some Tony Pulis pre-seasons then. Talk to me about Austria, mate.
Every day, 6:45,
yeah.
Phone rings. This is your wake-up call.
Like, we'd literally land at the hotel and go, "Lads, forget about your life for this next week, all right?" No. He says, "I want you to train, sleep."
Yeah. If you're not fit, you don't have a chance.
Edwin van Sar was in goal for us, and you had an unbelievable game. And everybody was just buzzing off him.
What goes through your head when this?
I was fuming. I was absolutely fuming, honestly.
I've got Crouchy in the front post. Right? I mean, you need to get over his head. You ain't
Robert
getting...
Hood.
I don't think I came for a corner for like 2 years.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Fozcast. We're talking to a Premier League goalie today. Over 250 Premier League appearances, 63 international caps, and he's a world record holder.
A
Tom,
world
you know.
Record. I did know.
Do you know what the world record is? By the way, it's Hazmir Begovic. Welcome to the Fozcast, mate.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you for making the journey down. Do you know what the world record is, by the way? Surely you know what the world record is.
Do I don't know exactly. No, I don't.
Okay. Tom, have you got it in front of you? You've got the exact world distance.
The world record is for the longest goal scored ever,
furthest distance
away, and it stands at 97.5 yards.
No.
Good going, that.
That's ridiculous, mate.
Good going, that.
So,
it was a cold Tuesday, windy night in Stoke, I think.
No,
so
it wasn't
that windy. Come
it
on.
Wasn't. It wasn't even a cold Tuesday night. It was a Saturday afternoon, wasn't it?
It was a beautiful Saturday afternoon. Yeah.
Do you know what? I remember exactly where I was when that was happened, right? I was injured. I was at West Brom, and I was in the Lillington Snooker Club, and we were there with the boys, and we were watching Soccer Saturday, and it flashed up like almost instantly, and we were like, "What on earth is going on here?" What went through your mind when that ball bounced over poor Artur Boric's head?
To be honest, Fozzy, I could make up a whole story about this, but really not much. I was just clearing my lines. But I caught it really good.
Really good. Clubbed it.
100 yards good.
I don't know if you see the video, because Peter Crouch was like, slow it down. I'm here. So I overhit him by miles. And obviously, freshly watered pitch. Boom.
Zinged off.
There you go. Job done.
Oh, poor Artur Boric. Have you spoken to him much about it? Like, because obviously you went then, like later on in your career, you signed for Bournemouth and Artur Boric is there. How does that go down?
It was seriously awkward for the first week. So I report for preseason, first day, we go to Marbella. And during the week, obviously, I know that I scored against Artur. And I was like, how do we speak about this? You know, do we just put it aside? Do we ignore it? What do we do? So I say nothing. You know what the lads are like in the dressing room.
And, they're all
and around
it.
Lunch. Ass. Have you spoken to him about it? Have you brought it up yet? I said, no, I haven't.
But they say it loud as well. They say it just loud enough so Artur might just about hear it.
So I'm saying, come on,
Naughty.
Say it any louder. Exactly. So you're putting me in a really awkward position, lads. But the best part, do you know Jimmy Glass?
Yes.
Right, so he was our player liaison.
And, is that what he does now? Player liaison? Yeah.
No way.
That's incredible.
He's got to figure it out, man. Yeah, he's chilling. But anyway, he's around just helping, getting balls and everything else. And at that time, there was a program on Sky about his goal for Carlisle.
Yeah, that is incredible, by the
which
way.
Which was a massive, it's incredible. Massive goal, right?
And this was a 96th-minute goal to keep them Carlisle in the Football League.
In the Football League,
Massive goal, right? And so it's like a Friday morning, and he's coming out, because he likes to be around the goalkeepers anyway, away from the outfield players. I said, lads, have you seen my documentary? Have you seen my show on Sky when I scored a goal? And then everyone started looking. No, Jimmy, we haven't. What is it on Sky? He's like... Oh, yeah, when I scored. And Ash, you scored a goal, didn't you?
I said,
I did, Jimmy. And then I'm looking at Art to listen. We might as well talk about it now. Just a huge apologies, man. I didn't mean it. No hard feelings. He's like, listen, don't worry about a thing. The only thing I would have done differently was I would have celebrated. So I said to him, big man, come on. So anyway, we got it out there and we were fine ever since.
You didn't actually celebrate though, did it? I remember watching it thinking, that's really nice. That it is really nice. Because I've had a goal scored against me, Paul Robinson. And in fairness, you know, he didn't even really celebrate too much either.
And what would you have done, Ben?
No, I would do exactly
Klinsmann?
I swear on my life I wouldn't. I swear. You'd be
in the crowd, sure.
No, but right, it's the circumstances too, right, guys? Like obviously, if you're scoring a last-minute equaliser,
yeah,
you're running around the whole stadium, aren't you? Right? Obviously, 10 seconds in, I'm sure what's going on. What's just happened? Is that legal? You know, what's going on?
So. You did nearly against Chelsea. You had a header, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
And it was quite close, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's the same thing, though. That would have been the 94th minute equaliser. Sure. And at that point, I'm sorry, I'm Klinsmann diving. I'm running around the whole place.
Flips and everything.
Because yours was after about 13 seconds or something,
exactly,
wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So it's a good start to the game, though.
Arda Boric, I've heard Aaron Ramsdale talk about him. He loves him, basically. He says he is. One of his biggest attributes as a goalkeeper was his ability to just forget everything. He could make the worst mistake in the world and he would not care about it.
Yeah, super strong mentally. Good guy all around. But I wouldn't say he didn't care.
Yeah.
You know, but he kind of gave up that vibe. He just kind of carried on with
life. What it is.
As if nothing happened.
Just crack on.
And I thought, that was really impressive, to be fair. And we had a good group. Yeah, Rambo. Trav was also there. Arta was there. So four of us. We had a really good group.
But Arta was a good guy. Could you reckon you could see Rambo, the potential in Rambo, even as a young kid?
He probably shot up faster than anyone would have thought.
Really,
Let's be honest. You know, I think the way he kind of came from a couple of like lower league spells into the Premier League light was fantastic, but definitely big potential. Because when I first signed at Bournemouth, there was always this plan of come in, play. We've got a young kid we've signed, Ramsdale. We want to try and nurture him and get him to the top level, help with that. And it happened very quickly, so fair play to him.
Yeah, I remember we played against Bournemouth and he was playing that game. And it was that season where he kind of came out of nowhere, because I think he's on loan the season before. He started the season. And I just thought, fair play, mate. Yeah. Like, you look like
came
you've got
from,
a
like,
bit.
League One, Wimbledon, they put him straight in. The club kind of went with the younger players and fair play, you made it work.
Yeah,
100%.
Right, let's talk about Everton. Tough season for you so far. What's your thoughts on how it's gone this year?
Yeah, it's obviously been a tough couple of years since I've been there. Obviously, it's been difficulties on and off the field. So much stuff going on around the club. So definitely not where the club needs to be, deserves to be, wants to be, all that kind of stuff, right? You know, the fan base, the tradition, the history. We deserve to be in the top 10. And I probably, in my wildest dreams, didn't imagine what was going to happen in the 2 years that I was there.
Yeah.
So that I've been here, and that's just the way it is. That's football. You can't predict it. The best thing about it is we've had a really good goalkeeping group.
Yeah,
you know, so that's been a lot of fun. You know, we've really great coach and Alan Kelly, obviously Pickers, JP leading the way, and then Lunners.
Andy Lonergan.
Lunners.
It's good, isn't it? I don't think people appreciate like the goalie core, the goalie union, right? It is. It's when you've got good guys in there,
it's the best day. Because if you don't have a good group, it's torture, isn't it? It's absolute torture.
But when you've got a good group of lads, right? Like I say, three or four, especially a couple older ones. I think you need to have a couple older ones. Yeah. That's what we had at Rev Rex with me and Mark Howard, like the older boys. And we get grief for being old. Yeah. It's fine. I don't care. But you go in every day and it's just pure, it's so nice, honestly. The outfield players, leave them to it. They can do what they want, but the goalie union, it's so nice.
Oh, it's so good. And we all kind of know our roles and we feed off each other. And of course, there's a couple of young lads in around that as well, which is great. But just guys, head down, good banter every day.
Is that the key to it, though? Sorry, Asma. Is that the key to it, knowing the roles? Because we've had people in the past, I think, like Emi Martinez, when I think you did a documentary with him. And I think the confusion when people don't quite know
who's
the roles,
going to be number one,
that
two,
might
that
be where
kind of
there's
thing,
is that fair to say?
I think it's definitely that a better option if you know your role. You know, I think of course you can have two number ones, all this kind of stuff, but I don't think that's ever a long term solution.
Yeah.
That's in my opinion. I think if you go in knowing your situation, of course nothing's ever set in stone. If you earn it, someone else drops off, gets injured, things can change. You know that's the name of the game.
Yeah.
But I think if you know your clear roles going in, I think that helps a lot, because you can either get your head around it or you don't. And if you do, you buy into it, that's when you have success. And I think it's not only like that in goalkeeping groups. I think it's in teams as well. I think if you know guys who know their roles, do their jobs, do them to the maximum of their ability, then I think that's what obviously helps you achieve things. And our group's been brilliant, honestly been brilliant. Obviously, Jordan has had a really fantastic couple of years, no arguments there. Obviously, we've all helped along that line, because sometimes you also need to know what your number one needs.
Yeah.
If it is your number one, right? You need someone maybe pushing him every single day. I've been in that position before, and obviously maybe someone who needs a couple, as you said, wiser guys around who can just calm things down, keep it steady, and help him as well. So
how's Jordan been this season? Because I think he's had a fantastic season, by the way, but how does he manage to deal with the pressure and expectation of playing with England and then coming back and playing for a struggling Premier League team? Do you know what I mean? I think in years gone by, England goalkeepers have always played for one of the better teams, at least, anyway, haven't they?
Yeah, well, listen, I don't want to simplify it too much, right? Because it sounds so simple, but it's really just about focusing day to day.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, I do my work every day, just come in, show up, you know, work 100%, no questions asked. And that kind of rubs off. And I think, you know, Andrew Lonergan, he does the same. And then I think it goes on to JP, and then JP does. So we're all doing it. We don't think too far ahead. We don't think it was a terrible result or big game or England this, England that. We just all keep it compartmentalized. We do our thing every day and focus on our work. And I've been so impressed with him, honestly.
Really, yeah.
You know, I didn't know when they first called me, like, this is what I want you to do. You know, help push Jordan, push each other, all that kind of stuff. And I honestly think seeing him every day, he's a top goalie, man. Yeah, world class.
Love that.
World class.
I'd say that having you and Andy Lonergan around has probably been the best thing for
it. And that's when I came, it was like the goalkeeper coach, Alan Kelly, again, like top notch.
Legend, yeah. Right?
Legend of the game. And he said, this is what I want to do. This is what I've been trying to do. Get this group together, and it's taken time, but finally when you have it, it works wonders. And you see it, like, it rub off, because good performances and everything don't just happen by chance.
Yeah, for sure.
So you got to do your work. You got to have the right people around you. And that's why I think, you know, he's obviously performed really well.
I like the sound of this little goalie union. Do you know, I think goalie coaches, the best goalie coaches I've worked with are ones who see it as you're their babies, basically. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? He is fully in control of that whole unit. He will know the pathway for the younger players coming through, like the 18s, 19s. He knows every single goalie. He knows you. He knows your family. He knows the main goalie. He knows what they need. And when you've got that guy, it's like I say, it is. It's like having a dad. Right. And you can lean on them for absolutely anything.
Fozzy, you've nailed it. Your goalkeeper coaches your everything. The proper ones, like the good ones in the game, they're your everything. You know, people say you need a psychologist. No, you don't.
Yeah.
You need your goalkeeper coach.
Yeah, it's true,
you know,
isn't it? Yeah.
You work, talk to them about stuff, especially the lads that have played, you know, obviously been there, done it. You're just telling them little details. Oh, I saw that. I thought of that. They can put themselves in your position.
Yeah, they've done it already.
They've
before,
done
yeah.
it, right? Yeah. So they can give you advice. Yeah, I remember that. I did that 20 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever. And they can really help you through those things. And just focus on the work.
Yeah.
You know, David Coles was one of my biggest mentors.
Yeah, Colesy, of course he was. Yeah, Colesy. Portsmouth, yeah.
But he put me together.
Yeah, you know, what a guy. Is there. He the guy literally who built you up?
He made me, yeah.
Taught you everything, taught you a technique.
Literally, like a Lego figure. You know, like took off my arms, legs, everything, put it back together, and boom, off
yeah,
I went.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Off I went. And he was like that. He said, the wheels never come off. Maybe one wheel is a little bit broken. We just put the, you know, screws back in and we go again. Like nothing ever. We keep the body strong. We go. The foundation's there, the base is there. And he just talks you through everything, shows you in a video, boom, this is what we'll do, focus on that.
That's incredible.
You just work, man.
Yeah, because they're not just coaches, are they? Goalie coaches aren't just goalie coaches, because we work regularly with Neil Cutler, Dave Watson. We obviously had lots of different people in. And their skill set is far more than just being a goalie coach, isn't it? So the mindset, the NLP, they are very, very well trained. And like Neil Cutler, for example, like the kind of... Oh, self
the process
growth and what he's learned to then implement, and like you said earlier on, being in charge of their unit, they've got a strategy for everything, from the kids and their pathway
everything.
Up
yeah.
to
absolutely
having the right number
yeah.
two and right number three.
Go on, you jump in.
It's so true. Like that relationship, you talk about Jordan. What's been the steady influence? 2 years at the same goalkeeper group, 4 years now, same goalkeeper coach. You do your thing, same goalkeeper coach with England. Stability, consistency, you work, and I know it's not. That's straightforward sometimes, because managers come and go and people change. And sometimes when you look at clubs, well, when the goalkeeper's changed 3-4 times, you know, the goalkeeper, what's going on?
Yeah.
They feel unsettled, right? And I think that can also lead to some negative things. So it's difficult. And then I think, and I know in my position now, for the last sort of 2 or 3 clubs that I've been to, main reason where I go somewhere probably is the goalkeeper coach.
Yeah, it's true. 100%. You need to know, like, it's a massive, massive deal. Yeah. Goalie coaches almost aren't like football people. They're not like, they don't need to be footballers. Or being a goalie, like you say, like Colesy, for example, take Colesy. He has to take this raw kid, yeah, a raw young Asmir Begovic, who's probably gangly and just all over the shop. Do you know what I mean?
All over
the shop. And then try and sort of like, actually box it in a little bit and go, no, like, try and stay within these parameters here. Do this with your hands. And at that age as well, like, because I remember, like, I've got a funny story about Portsmouth when you were younger, actually. I remember watching you. So I was at Man United at the time and we were playing away at Portman Road. And you had an unbelievable game. An unbelievable game. Edwin van Sar was in goal for us and you had an unbelievable game. And I'm like the young one coming through at Man United hoping to do a bit kind of thing. And everybody was just buzzing off him. And he's the same age as me.
No, no, you're 35 as me,
yeah, yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, he's a young one coming through.
So, yeah.
But I'm thinking, shut up, would you like? I don't need this. Like, they were buzzing. I mean, everybody. The manager was talking about you, all the play. At one point, I remember somebody saying, oh, I think we need to sign this kid, Liam. We need to sign this kid.
What goes through your head when this?
I was fuming. I was absolutely fuming, honestly. But there were, like, transfer rumours and rumblings. Yeah. All they've always been Man United have been interested. I've always seen that, especially when I was at my time there. But you were this young, raw kid that just, like, you had something about you. That's what it is, mate, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I appreciate the kind words, first and foremost, but I was in a really good environment, you know, coming through as a kid. Again, it's a thing for myself now. I say to younger goalkeepers, everyone says, oh, this club. I said, who is the goalkeeper coach?
Yeah, boom.
Who is the goalkeeper coach? What's the plan? What does things look like? And I was there, and that's what gave me the platform. You know, I would love to stay at Pompey longer and work with Colsey. Yeah. Obviously, the club was a mess, and I had to sell and all this kind of stuff, but if you're in that good position, then, like you say, perform. And I was, 19, 20, playing Premier League, whatever it was, Man United, Liverpool. Ugh. And I'm not even thinking about it. I'm just doing my thing because my day-to-day works right. Got the good coach. Boom. Everything else takes care of itself.
That's interesting. You mentioned about kind of coming in and knowing your role. So when you signed for Chelsea, for example, so you left Leicester Stoke, joined Chelsea, you're signing there with Thibaut Courtois as number one. So tell us a little bit about that. So obviously you go in, have you been told, right, you're coming in as number two, and what were you told to kind of do?
Yeah, I
want to
know the thought process
then
of this one, because this one really surprised me at the time.
Yeah, so I listened to your Joe Hart episode. He said he spoke to Jose Mourinho. I said, I wish I didn't speak to him.
Really? He just hooked you in?
He hooked me in.
Oh, okay.
Hooked me in.
Right, okay.
I wasn't planning on going to Chelsea. I had a couple other, I knew I was leaving Stoke. Again, they had to cash in, and you know, it was time for that next step in my career. I'd achieved everything I could there. It's time for Champions League football.
You're a bit of a Stokey legend, by the way.
Yeah, I love
it. Just putting it out there, you're a Stokey legend. Because like I said, I've got family in Stoke and they've always loved you. Beggo, they call you, by the way.
I know. And absolutely. It's a northern thing,
they
right?
Love
I don't
you,
know
mate,
why.
Honestly.
Funny, I've just opened up an academy in Stoke. So I love the area. I really love everything about the club. But it was time to go.
Yeah.
Time to go and compete for trophies, win trophies. And I had a couple other options. And next thing I know, I've got Mourinho, Jose on the phone, and like it was like April, May time, and you know, I said Petrček's leaving. Again, can't keep the two number ones, but I want two number ones. You know, Thibaut is number one. Obviously, we're going to win the title.
Yeah.
He's number one, but I want a number two to be the same or equal. You know, very close level. And you'll get games. We'll hopefully be in cup competitions and you know, odd Premier League games, whatever happens. And I was hooked. I said. He said, you were the one and only choice. And I was there with the technical director, goalkeeper coach. I said, listen, we don't have plan B. You're the one and only choice. This is what it is. He's texting me after, you know, this is when we meet up for preseason. This is where we're going.
Where do I sign?
And then there you go. Next thing I know, I'm at Chelsea. And,
how was that thought process then for you then? Because I'm sure you've had to have a conversation with maybe your wife or whoever it was and say, how is this going to work then? But you've been so used to being a number one goalkeeper, playing week in, week out regularly, to then all of a sudden go and say, right, I know I'm not going to be playing all the time. You have to get used to it a bit, don't you?
And it was too early for me, Ben. It was too early for me. I couldn't get my head around it. The thing that kept me going was obviously you're at Chelsea. Every day, training's unbelievable.
Yeah, with the top players, top
players. We have leaders,
players.
We've got captain, we've got all this, like everything there. We're competing for trophies. You're in Europe, you're Champions League. So that keeps you going, right? That keeps you going. And the fact is, what I learned through that, even though it was early for me and I only spent 2 years there because I couldn't do it for any longer, not playing and sort of knowing you're not playing anyway. But, you know, it was what it taught me was to be a team.
Yeah.
And it was 20 plus guys, top class internationals. I think when international break, there's like
there's nobody there.
Like JT was the 35, 36, it was like two players left.
Maybe an injured player. That's
maybe
about
an
it.
Injured player. Yeah. So everyone's an international. Everyone's doing the best, competing at the highest level. And, you know, but what we had to do was sacrifice.
Yeah.
You know, you look at our bench sometimes, it's like freaking Willian, Fabregas, Terry.
You got to hold your hands up sometimes.
But we wanted to win. That taught me, you know, we could have won a couple of trophies, lost in a couple of finals. And again, one of my best memories ever was winning the Premier League title.
Really?
And not playing that many games. Because being part of that team, being, you know, a bunch of brothers, we had to sacrifice just to, you know, park your ego at the door. Training wasn't easy every day. Lads, of course, frustrated. But we had a common goal, and that's what we came together to do, was to win a title. So I saw what success meant, what you had to do to achieve success. You had to bring in those players. And you look at Man City now, like those guys are all –
all on the team.
All superstars, man. Every single one of them.
This is where I think it's the most important part of like being a successful footballer is you have to leave your ego. You do. You have to park it at the door. To be a good second choice goalkeeper, you have to be a cheerleader, like an unbelievable cheerleader as well. You have to blow smoke up that goalie's ass every single day, even if he knows it's bullshit. Genuinely, even if he knows it's bullshit, you still have to say, you're the man you are. You're going to smash it today. You're going to smash it today. When you know you can do a job yourself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a mad thing to do.
It's a mad one. Like I said, it was too early for me. I couldn't do it. I was 20
I thought this at the time. Yeah, it was. This is why it surprised me so much.
It surprised me. You're
a playing goalie, yeah?
I know.
You have footballers and goalies especially. You have goalies who will be a number two. They might come into the team because somebody's injured. They might play for a few months or a few weeks or whatever. But eventually they'll find their way back as number two because they're not playing goalies, yeah? But you are a playing goalie and you always have been. You're somebody, like I say, you're 35 years old now, right? I genuinely think you could do, like we said this before, and I'm not joking, you could do like a Joe Hart. You could go and play somewhere for another 4 or 5 years and absolutely smash it, invigorate yourself again and go, yeah, mate, I'm better than
isn't it about the right, because you've seen players come over, this is goalkeepers, outfield players. Look at the one that I was reading about yesterday was Sebastian Haller, who didn't quite work for him at West Ham, and he's absolutely tearing it up at Dortmund now. But it's almost finding the right home, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It's like managers and stuff. Yeah, like Roy Hodgson, right? Palace just seems to be...
It fits, doesn't it?
That must be the same for a goalkeeper.
Yeah. I said earlier, fit, you know, what your position is, what your role in the team is, and of course your daily work. So it fits a huge thing. You know, people say, well, this play didn't work out. But sometimes you don't know all these things.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know exactly what you're walking into. Like, I didn't know what I was... Like, I didn't know what Everton was going to be.
Yeah.
Honestly, I thought Everton, great club, or just finished 10th, maybe an off year.
Well, from the outside, that's kind of...
This is what you're
thinking. A couple
of
years ago, that's how it looks, doesn't it?
This is what you're thinking. So you don't always know. Players don't always know. As much as you think, like I said, in my wildest dreams, could I imagine this? You know, you just don't. Sometimes you don't know everything, so it's difficult. But, you know, finding that right fit is absolutely massively important.
So what sort of manager is your perfect fit? Because you played for some good managers, by the way.
Some really varied managers.
Some seriously varied managers.
Sean Dyche, Eddie Howe.
I want to do a bit of Pulis talk. I've got to do a bit of Pulis talk.
Before we do Pulis talk, before we go off Chelsea, can I just ask you, how good is Thibaut Courtois? Oof.
Top, yeah. I mean, everything. It's got absolutely everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got absolutely everything.
When you walked through the door, did you kind of go, wow? Or has he developed even more since he's gone to Madrid?
I think he's developed even more. Even when we were there working every day, you know. Again, Ben, like you know this as well. No matter if it's Thibaut, it's Gigi, Donnarumma.
Yeah.
We worked out Jordan now. No matter what, you have to still work every day. As soon as you don't work every day, things happen and things don't go well. And that's what I saw with Thibaut. And then, you know, when you have that environment, goalkeepers pushing each other, these guys work. You know, they work every day, do their gym, whatever they need to do to make sure they're ready for every single game. And that's why they're playing 40, 50, 60 games a year. And it's that drive mentally that I saw. And again, that was the best part I took from Chelsea, seeing these guys, top players, animals, every day, boom, push,
mentality.
Push, push. We push every day, every 5-a-side, every 10v10 in training. It's not... 5-0 one team, it's 0-0, it's 1-1, 2-1.
Losing's a problem, isn't it?
Losing's a problem, man. Because you know, it's like, you know, you've got freaking Zlatan or Terry ripping your new one if you don't. And that's the sort of environment that it's in. So it's just seeing Thibaut every day. Honestly, we have, you know, still a really good friendship today. Nothing but respect for the guy. Top, top goalkeeper, good guy, and just putting the work every single day.
Yeah, because you were Milan on loan, weren't you? Mm. So again, you were there. So was Zlatan there?
Yeah.
When you were there?
Yeah.
I've got to ask, what's he like? As a guy.
Big dog.
I've got to ask.
Again, you know, I'm there. It's January and I'm looking to go and play. Like, again, you know, that's always the thing. I wasn't getting a sniff for Bournemouth. I was out. They wanted to.
What's a loan move, by the way? I remember seeing this come up, right? Azamir Begovic joins AC Milan. I'm thinking that is, oh my God, that is like the dream, surely.
Right, so obviously Bournemouth have moved in a completely different direction. Yeah. A few of us on the out. So if football goes business, fine, no problem. So I'm sitting there, and I get a phone call one day, and it's like a Thursday in AC Milan, and you know, you're going to be speaking to Paolo Maldini in a few minutes. So I've got Paolo Maldini, Zvonimir Boban, and Ricky Massara on the phone on a Thursday. Like, they're the sort of three running football operations. And we have the youngest squad in the league. We need to bring in experience. We need to bring in leaders to push all the way. We're going to bring in three or four top players. of that caliber, of that sort of profile, and you're one of them. And I'm like, yep. No problem. Yep. I'll be there. So I was on a flight on like Sunday morning. No idea what I was signing. I have no idea like the contract was. I'm there doing medicals. Said to the agent, just whatever, tell me what I need to sign up, whatever. I don't care about percentages, whatever. And that was it. And it was myself, Zlatan, and Simon Kjær, top player. So I go there and sign. First morning, I usually like to get in early at the training ground. And there I'm in, just having breakfast, like 9 o'clock in the morning. And who walks in? Of course, Zlatan. And we talk in Bosnian. Obviously, he's from Bosnian descent and family, so we can speak the same language.
Nice, yeah, okay.
And say, hey, brother, hey, brate, how are you? All that kind of stuff. So he sits next to me, and first thing he says, you remember when I scored against you, don't you? And this is a preseason game where, like, in Charlotte, no way. Chelsea, PSG. And I said to him, oh, of course, I remember, get out of here. So this guy never takes a day off, remembers every detail, pushes everyone. Again, Fozzy, 38, 39 was the time. Absolute machine. Pushed in training. You so much as misplaced a five-yard pass. Like, you would know about it. You know, you would know about it. It would kill you instantly. And that sort of behavior every day, intensity. You look at Peps now. That guy, they're beating us 3-0 the other day, Goodison.
Yeah.
And he's still shouting for every decision. Players misplacing. He's getting angry. It's that sort of intensity, energy, boom, you need it every day. And Zlatan was top of that. No, I mean, again, people would tell him, listen, you're 30, like, calm, take a day off. No. And it's kind of to his detriment because he's blown his body up doing it. But he was just an absolute machine.
He doesn't seem like he's slowing down, does he?
No, he doesn't. Like, he did his cruciate, didn't he, that year?
Came
as
back
well.
In 6 months.
Came back in 6 months. Good to go again. Looked $1 million. Always looks $1 million, don't he?
Machine. Absolute machine. You see him in the gym. Doing his kickboxing and
I love this talk. This is like this is the bit that people don't get to see behind the scenes. The training bit is what transfers to the pitch on a Saturday afternoon. Yeah. If you've got a few of them leaders, like, you would be the same though. I guarantee you in a five-a-side, you're getting after people, aren't
absolutely.
You? Come
100%.
On, get back.
I'm killing
tackle, all that kind of stuff.
Every player, the coach, so much he gives a bad decision. I'm on the coach, like on the coach, refereeing, whatever. Like, it's to win. Like, we're there to win. Every day after we shake hands, we hug each other, and we go, you know, next day. So. That's just sort of my
We were going to talk managers, Ben. Sorry.
I want to talk Pulis.
Like, TP.
We've both played under Tony Pulis. I just put it out there. I love the guy. I do. Yeah. I absolutely love the guy. I love playing for him. I knew exactly what I had to do. Kick it as far as I could, basically. What are your recollections of TP?
Yeah, just a great, great football man. Again, that was a time at Pompey. I was just coming through in the Premier League and Pompey had to sell. And I have a couple options and... Yeah, Tony Pulis got on the phone, and one of his assistants actually was my youth team coach at Pompey. So it was an easy decision. And yeah, he gave me the opportunity to really establish myself.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be more thankful to him, and just a really good, solid man, you know, like, got us ready to play. Of course, we had our certain style. We absolutely made it work, you know. And but again, what he always said was, characters before players.
Yeah, true. That is the biggest thing.
You had it at West Brom. What a group of dressing room. Like, we at Stoke should have not achieved what we did.
For sure.
Let's be honest. Yeah. If you were to look on paper, but what he brought was together certain players. He brought in 3 or 4 young players at the time. They obviously built around. It was myself, Ryan Shawcross, Robert Huth, and Crouchy came in, and Steven and Zonzi came. So it is spine of the team. But around that, just unbelievable people, like players who would just give anything for you and everything. And we had that togetherness that just... You know, cup finals, Europa League, Stoke. I mean,
ridiculous.
That's the Tony Pulis team, isn't it? Right.
Yeah.
Asmir Begovic in goal.
I just saw height. I just think height.
Peter Crouch in front. What's happening here?
Defending defensive set plays. It was the best place to be. And I love coming for crosses.
Go on, lads. Yeah.
And I love coming. I don't need to. I've got Crouch in the front post, right? I mean, to get it over his head. Robert Huth behind him. Shawcross, you know, and then. If it wasn't Crouch, it's freaking Kenwyn Jones.
Kenwyn Jones is a beast.
Mate. I don't think I came for a corner for like 2 years.
This is the dream, though. This is why.
It's beautiful.
This is sometimes why you find yourself in teams and you think, this is just the perfect fit. Like, the ball would come back to you as a goalie, and TP would be going, defenders, go away. Get away as far as you can, all right? And he would be saying to you, kick it, son. Kick it, son. And you knew exactly what you had to do. There were no grey areas.
Kick it, son.
There were no grey areas. Oh, it was so black and white.
It was so funny, though. Like, you look at when you're at like West Brom, your back four was like 6'4", left back. 6'4", right back. 6'5", centre back.
Brilliant. I mean, I think we had Robert Huth playing left back at some point.
Yeah.
Brilliant. But it worked. It worked.
It will work though. Yeah, you're not playing with like fullbacks. They don't do that. You're a defender, mate. Exactly. Defend it. That's
exactly.
It.
You don't need to go up. You don't need to overlap.
That's the highlight of my year, was listening to Asmir before we did it to a Tony Pulis impression. Was like, kick it, son.
Kick it, son. Yeah, no, just crouch it, get on the angle. Absolutely, yeah, I loved it, but it worked.
You must have done some Tony Pulis pre-seasons then. Talk to me about Austria, mate. Yeah, I guarantee you went to the same place.
Yeah, the mountains.
Hotel Schloss Pischlein, it was called.
No air conditioning, it was awful.
It was the same hotel. He went there. I went there with Stoke with him when I was 20 years old, and then I went with him with West Brom when I was 34 years old. The same place, the same schedule, the same everything it was.
To be fair, you didn't mind it because the cycling. Huh?
Yeah, I didn't do the running part. I was just cycling every day. I loved it. I absolutely buzzed off it.
Every day, 6:45, phone rings. This is your wake-up call. And, meet 7 o'clock in reception. And one day it's running. So you're running. You do run through the hills. And then literally it's get to the bottom of this hill and you're looking up and it's just sprints up to. I don't even know how many meters, honestly, guys.
It's rank.
You know, I don't mind running, but it was absolutely brutal. The next day it's cycling. So you get on the bikes, 7 a.m. and in the same hills on the bike. But that's the thing. Again, we had that spirit where – just worked.
He garners that spirit, though. He makes it a spirit. You're knackered at 7 o'clock in the morning. Your morale is so low, honestly. Everybody, by like the fifth day, you're so low.
I feel like I'm in Tour de France. Like, what's happened here? And I could never imagine doing it for more than 5 days, but that's what they do. But again, the camaraderie was brilliant because even lads who weren't good at cycling or couldn't change the gears, whatever was going on, they just put it on their shoulder.
Yeah.
And they run it. Right, like, up. There's no questions asked. We just did it. It was the culture. Yeah. You did it. Dead in the morning, 11 o'clock gym.
Yeah.
11, so you have breakfast and gym at 11 o'clock, lunch. And then they give you a football session at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, a token football session.
Can't even move.
Long ball session.
I'm not sure what you want from me. I can't move. So just catch a few volleys and hope for the best.
He used to say, lads, we'd literally land at the hotel and go, lads, forget about your life for this next week, all right? Forget about your life. Your life isn't important this week, all right? You're going to be tired. He says, I don't even want you walking around the hotel. No. He says, I want you to train, sleep, train, sleep, train, sleep, and we'll do the same thing tomorrow. What? So don't even think about your
life.
One
thing I've always wanted to ask with Tony Pulis is, because you hear stories of Capello, obviously, you were deeply unhappy that he took away the ketchup and so on and so forth. What was like Tony Pulis's nutrition like? Was it quite traditional in terms of like football terms?
He wasn't too fussed on that, really, was he?
Wasn't too fussed. No, you'd always
nutrition,
eat well and stay at good hotels and stuff like that. So he was never fussed about that kind of stuff.
Okay.
He was good. It was good, honestly, like took care of the lads. Really, like I said, brought just a good group.
Yeah.
You know, those years of Stoke, we just had great guys. And you're still friends with those guys today.
Yeah, for sure. So
that was to him. That's what I learned. It was character before player.
Yeah.
So I've got a question then. So obviously we've talked about Tony Pulis, looking at different styles of manager. How would you, because you worked under Eddie Howe. So what was Eddie like in comparison, not comparison directly to Tony, but what was Eddie like on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, again, I mean, just all those managers, like I always find it difficult to say who was better or worse because they're in their own right doing the things at the highest level. They've achieved so many good things. So they just do things differently. Again, one common thing under all these top managers, one is the physical side. So Bournemouth, again, preseason, training in a week, like it was tough, physically tough. It was on the field, in the gym. Like he would push you to the absolute. Antonio Conte.
A week with him in Austria was
absolutely brutal. So they always push you physically. So they're all common denominator. If you're not fit, Sean Dyche, same. Yeah. If you're not fit, you don't have a chance.
Did Conte do double sessions through the season?
No.
I've heard Pochettino does that.
No, the Celtica boshed senior players.
Yeah, that does get boshed.
We had to adjust that, but it was just one long session. And Jim was sort of incorporated in the outside. But yeah, that wouldn't have worked, the double sessions. But again, coming on the physical side, pushed you to the max. Yeah. All of them, Eddie was absolutely hot on it. Like, you know, we're not fit. We're like AFC Bournemouth fit. You know, this was a different level. Because if you have that baseline, that should you know, pay you back over a season.
To be fair, well, the way the Bournemouth played as well, like I remember when they first got, yeah, but as soon as the ball got went out of play, when Bournemouth got promoted, as soon as the ball went out of play, it was back in play.
Maybe. Yeah, there was a conscious thing with the ball boys, wasn't it? Their training with the ball boys.
They would score so many goals by catching players off guard. I saw we had a stat last year at Watford that Watford were the worst, when the ball went out of play, yeah, we covered the least distance when the ball was out of play. So basically, as soon as that ball went out of play, all the Watford players would go, oh, and breathe. Yeah. And they would switch off. Yeah. They would switch off. And they were bottom of the league table. And there's no reason why we were bottom of the league. That's no surprise, sorry. We were bottom of the league table in the actual league as well. Because they're the moments where you've got to get back into position. You know what I mean? It's the ball's out of play for sure, but it's not rest. You don't get to just switch off for a minute. And that's what Bournemouth worked on so well. Corners, throw-ins, everything was just, oh my God, lads, switch the heck on, would you? And you would score so many goals just by catching teams off guard.
Yeah, it was called the 6-second rule. Ball had to be in play.
As soon as it went out, boom.
Yeah, it had to be in play. So just try and grab the ball and boom, off you went. Because that's the thing. Teams are unorganized that time. Yeah. So you can one, keep possession, but you can potentially get an attack off and actually catch team off guard.
That's
so,
why now I think the fitness levels in football are higher than they've ever been. Mm. Higher than they've ever been. But not just like distance covered. It will be high intensity distances, those quick runs to get back in as soon as you can. The top teams now, that's just a given. You have to have that now.
Here's a question for if the fitness is higher than it's ever been, and I don't doubt that for a second, what's the counter argument is that there is a potential burnout. So it's been kind of thrown at Harry Kane over the years that come England time, or all of the England players, they look tired because of the intensity of the Premier League. Do you think that players in pre-season should take it almost like an extended period of pure rest and not even almost ticking over?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a couple of things, but I don't know what you think. There's a couple of issues in football, especially the top level lads. Like, you know, like I don't play international anymore, so I get a chance to take a breath. But when you're playing that international club football, European football,
yeah,
and then like in your contract, you get 21 days off. It says you have to have the 21 days.
Nah.
It's not enough. So when a Harry Kane plays 11 months of the year, or whoever like finishes the beginning of July, you have to give more time off. Now, what that will mean is you probably won't be ready for the first couple of games of the season.
Yeah, you're always on catch-up. So, always on catch-up.
So there, that's a huge thing. That's a huge thing. And I think, obviously, lads, no one, the games are not going to be cut anytime soon.
No.
We know that.
Well, they're going to just add more and more. They're going
to
add more
so
and more.
So I think there has to be a level of management, because if you don't, you're never going to get the rest to recover from such a long season. And then not only that, but then get ready to go again, because all you're doing is just maintaining, basically.
Yeah.
And that's what happens, and that's when the guys get injured.
The problem is as well for these top players, most of them are at top teams, and it's the travel as well. The games, don't get me wrong, you're playing, some of the top lads are playing 60 games a season, but the travel that you're doing in between that, like I said, we were talking about driving earlier, how much driving takes out of you, doesn't it, to wherever you might need to go if you're in the car for 2 hours. It just absolutely zonks you.
Well, this is what surprises me. I understand there's the commercial element with football clubs, but in pre-season, you know, globetrotting to Australasia, Asia, North America, and I know that they fly first class, but it's tiring. Just traveling is tiring, isn't it?
For sure.
And time zone switching, it takes some adjustment, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, they'll say only time will tell, but there's no surprise some of these big players getting these big injuries.
Yeah, I found it interesting that you're probably last year 18 months at Watford, was it probably fair to say you had a lot of niggles?
Yeah,
niggles, and you were kind of, you know, partly age and throwing yourself around
age,
a lot
for sure.
But you had a lot of niggles, and then you had like 8-9 months of being retired and then came back to Wrexham. It was almost like your body had a hard reset, because since you've come back, unless you told me otherwise, you seem to be
a lot fitter.
Fit as a fiddle.
Oh, yeah. 9 months off, mate, to actually rest your body as mate.
That'd be nice. That
God.
Would be nice.
Honestly.
That would be nice.
Like, say that you, what's the biggest pre-season off you've ever had? What, 2 months, 6 weeks?
Oh, yeah. Maximum 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Maximum. Oh, but like I said, when you're playing, doing the international stuff, like the England lads, Jordan was talking to the other day, got picked the England squad. They've got a game 19th of June.
Oh, come on.
Have they?
19th of June.
I'm telling
you. Pathetic, isn't it?
19th, and then, you know, you've got to think about, you've got to be back in pre-season.
Normally 5th of July.
Beginning of July.
Both the 5th of July it'll be, won't it?
So even if he gets another week, he's again playing catch up all the time. You know, this is the thing. You never get a, because the body just needs rest. So you're not getting the rest, and then never can never rest, recover, and then build again.
And what about your mind? How important is it for you to go on holiday with your family, to hang out with mates? How important is that after a long season?
Massive. Oh, massive. Yeah. You know, the tank's empty on all sorts, physical, mental, spiritual, all that kind of stuff. Family, you need to replenish the tank. And those are the guys I feel bad for. Them. People like give, you know, some outfield players, Harry Maguire, hard time, but the guy's been playing 3 years consistently.
Yeah, literally consistently. Yeah. He's always in the England.
You know what I mean? Like it's not possible. Van Dijk then got injured. You know, those players were doing it, and it's just at some point you will reach burnout. You will reach the point of like the body's going to break down, and then what happens once it breaks down? Difficult to rebuild, and you know what happens then? You're more injury prone. Yeah. All this kind
and
of stuff.
Try and rush you back as well. If you're
and then
player.
You're fighting the whole thing all the time, and that's niggles. All this kind of stuff happens.
So what's next for Azmir Begovic? 35 years old, contract's up in the summer.
Yep.
Any thoughts on, like, do you want to carry on playing?
100%, 100%. No, I still, I mean, been really blessed physically, feel fantastic, no injuries, nothing whatsoever. Trained, played all year. Feel in a great spot physically.
Yeah.
So looking forward to see what the future has to bring, see what the opportunities, what comes up.
I want to see you back on the pitch, mate. I do. Yeah. I want to see you back on the pitch.
Yeah, I'd love to. Again, I referenced Joe because it was so recent that you spoke to him again. Yeah. I know that in my stage of now of my life and career, I'm not number one anymore.
Yeah.
You know, my family, my kids, it's important that I see them. You know, I've not seen them much over the last 3-4 years because of travel, schedules. Yeah, you know how demanding it is, and Milan and Everton and Bournemouth. That year in the championship, we played 46 games in a condensed season. So again, you
Saturday,
went up there.
Wednesday,
do you remember?
Saturday, Wednesday.
I don't know where I was. Yeah. I don't know where I was sleeping. Like, it was just mad, honestly.
Relentless, isn't it?
It was relentless, so I haven't seen him. So I know that I want to try and fit some stuff in. But at the same time, yeah, physically, I got to keep training, keep playing, keep getting contracts, keep pushing myself. Because I still have that drive.
Yeah.
You know, I still have that drive.
Damn right you have as well.
That
mate.
Drive every day. Because you know what it's like? We talked earlier about that work, that relentlessness. If you don't have the drive to push yourself every day, every week, and on a rainy day, on a Tuesday, Wednesday, when you're training, then that's when it becomes difficult. And as soon as it becomes a chore, then I can't do it.
I think I had that towards the end of last year. Genuinely, that's.
But you're not the only one. You know what? Petr Cech said this to me once.
Really,
you know, because
yeah.
he retired relatively early.
Yeah,
right?
He did, didn't
you know?
He? Yeah.
And that's kind of when he went in back into training and he was doing stuff. And he said, "As the biggest thing I probably regret was not taking 3-4 months off."
Yeah. Just wait and see.
Just seeing, I would have rested my body, rested my mind. Yeah. I know he walked into a really good position, so it was kind of difficult for him.
Yeah.
But he said I would have taken 3-4 months off, and then
he could have carried on playing for sure.
I think he could have played another 5 years. I'm telling you, I really could. I really think so.
Fantastic. Talk to me about AB1 then, the brand.
Yes.
So AB1.
AB1GK.
Initially a glove company, yeah?
Yeah.
And then sort of branched out from there.
Well, listen, it started about 4 years ago. You know, I've been passionate about goalkeeping, been in this for so many years, same as you. It's been in my family. My dad was a goalkeeper. So just absolutely love goalkeeping. And the opportunity presented itself where I was in a position where I could do something different.
Yeah.
And I chose to create my own brand. You know, I really thought there was a gap in the market for it, one from a product side of things. You already say glove. No other goalkeeper, we're the one of one in the world. No other goalkeeper has his own brand.
Yeah.
You know, they're obviously all associated to brands, endorsed certain brands. But we are actually named after myself.
Yeah, I like that personality
a little.
I love that, yeah.
So it's my
name. There's a face behind it.
It's my name on the door, the face behind it. And we saw a gap and we saw, let's go for it.
Yeah.
And so we ended up starting, you know, the building the range. We've got really good products, which have been well received all over the market. And then what we always wanted to do within that, we wanted to become a complete brand. So offer the academies where we can, you know, use our knowledge we've used in so many years, kind of transfer down through coaching, through the coaches and the sessions. Give goalkeepers, because we know goalkeepers can't train themselves. Kids, you know, you need a coach, you need a specialized coach. The thing that I know happens commonly all the time, and it's no one's fault, it just is what it is. But when you're a goalkeeper at a grassroots team, just go stand in the corner and maybe, you know, a volunteer, a parent, God bless them.
Just chuck a ball.
Just chuck a ball in, right?
It's horrible, isn't it?
And you look
it?
At the kid.
No
think,
one loves goalies, eh? It's horrible.
And it's, they just don't know. It's no one's fault. Like I said, no one's fault.
Yeah,
it's just what happens.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
if
yeah.
we can, all over UK now, we're all over Europe, if we can provide that regular coaching, and then the camps have been fantastic as well during school holidays. So we're now becoming a complete brand where we can offer all these things. And what's the main goal? Open up opportunities for kids. You know, it's something I'm passionate about. Charity work, whatever, everything I've done. Open up opportunities, get kids out there, get them, you know, have fun, make friends, socialize, that's be healthy, part, be
just
fit.
Get outside.
Be fit. So that's the fundamental thing. And then on top of that, if you're enjoying it and doing what you love, we'll add the goalkeeping. We'll add the technical stuff on top of that.
Talk to me about some of the goalies that are wearing the AB one.
Yeah, a few of the boys. Obviously, Tom Heaton's involved with the brand. Yeah. You know, Heats really well. Great guy. We got Vanya Milinkovic-Savic at Torino. Yeah. He represented us at the World Cup. So within 3-4 period, you know, we're at the Euros, we're at the World Cup. We're going to be at the Women's World Cup. You know, nice. Courtney Brosnan, Sabrina D'Angelo, Sandy McIver. They're going to be hopefully representing us in the World Cup this summer.
Fantastic.
Who else? We got Alex Meyer, Dortmund. Yeah, he could be champions, potential champions in the Bundesliga. So... yeah, it's going well, and you know, doing a lot of stuff back home as well. A lot of Bosnian goalkeepers wearing it, so trying to keep growing it. You know, of course, there's always challenges. We had COVID, we had all this good stuff, which no one. It was a great time to start a company. I tell you what.
Oh yeah, damn right, bloody hell.
But
yeah,
you learn, and you know what, Ben, I so much respect for you because you know you're like a well balanced person. You know, you have your professional side where you play your football and everything else, but I think you have the balance in life where this gives me a bit of balance. And of course, family, football, and this stuff just gives me so much satisfaction to see something on a drawing or
come to life.
Oh,
I love
like
it,
this,
mate.
You know, this is amazing. And I see an academy. Oh, one day we don't have anything. Next day we launch an academy in Stoke, and a month later, it's 20 goalkeepers being trained. Beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. So yeah, it's been a blast.
I love that, mate. I think it's so important to have. I do. I think it's so important to have you can't pigeonhole yourself as a footballer. You shouldn't. You should nobody out there, nobody playing football should pigeonhole themselves as a footballer. You're so much more than football, aren't you? You got to be able to do something else, look at something else, learn something else. Yeah. I love what you're doing, mate. It's absolutely top class. We got some quick fires for you then, yeah?
We've got some quick fires, yeah. Right, I'll kick us off, shall I?
Nothing too major, I don't know.
No, it's not the hard-hitting stuff. This is...
We don't do hard-hitting here, mate.
Right, if you could pick one teammate, past or present, to be on your team in a quiz, who would it be?
Oh, that's a good question, that.
Oh, that's a good question, isn't it? Connor Cody.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We need to get him on the podcast.
Well, you were talking to him, weren't you?
Yeah, we need to get him on the podcast.
Yeah, we do.
Like
he seems like, but he must be as good a guy as he seems.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah,
he great seems guy. Like a level-headed man.
Yeah, he does. That's the
a really level-headed
great guy.
Man.
Could just all around great guy. We've actually got a few at Everton now. We've got a good group. Codes.
Good like in the that. Quiz then.
Yeah,
right.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's got some decent knowledge. Yeah, good. Especially sports knowledge.
Like that.
What's your bucket list sporting event as a fan?
Love to go to the Masters.
Yes, love that. It's the right answer, by the way.
It's the right.
Masters,
the right
second Super Bowl.
Yeah, there you go. Masters first, though, is the right answer. Yeah. It's the way that it goes.
Cheat meal. What's your guilty pleasure? Cheat meal.
Not cheap. Cheat meal.
Yeah.
Love a good burger.
Yep, that'll be mine as well. That's the right answer. Big, dirty burger. The best goalie you've seen up close and personal, the best goalie you've trained with and got to see and just go, whew, yeah.
Oh, I can't answer that. That's...
You've played with some serious GKs, haven't you?
A couple if you want to.
Why don't you choose? Yeah, why don't you choose?
How good is Donnarumma? I mean, he is.
Unbelievable.
Oh, he's a freak. He's an absolute freak. You don't get people built like him.
Man mountain.
Yeah, you don't get people built like him that can move like him and do what he does. It's a freak.
Like when you see him in the golf penalty, like YouTube asked me, it's bigger than you, Ben. Yeah. And we were talking about it recently with, I can't remember, we were saying about taking a penalty. When you see him in the goal.
Oh, mate, you're losing. Yeah, that cup final, the World Cup final, you knew what was going to happen.
I mean, he's eating the ball. Like, honestly, no, I he's a man mountain. I'm 6'6", 230, and I swear I feel small. I swear I feel small.
Just a man.
Big guy, man. Like, big guy, you know, from down there. And just when he dives, because the way his technique is fantastic, and he sort of goes forward, dives forward, and just like dives 2 meters past the post.
It's freakish, isn't it?
It's incredible, man. Yeah. Honestly, and again, such a great relationship. So I can't choose. You've got Thibaut, you've got Gigi, Jordan. And you know what? Actually, some other ones I need to mention, like, you know, they played a big role in my career, like Dean Kiley.
Yeah, Dana, yeah.
Mentored me again when Colsey. Yeah. So we had Colsey. Yeah. I mean, I was like, the fit, again, I was lucky. Dino driving me to training. We're on there. Nando's.
He's from
training.
Here as well.
Yeah.
Is he?
From Warwick, isn't he?
Yeah,
next town down.
Like, what a legend. You know, we would go to Nando's. Colsey would beast us during the day. And then we'd, you know, go chill out in the evening together and just hang out. And So he was played a huge part in my career. Nice Thomas Sorensen.
We'll have to get Dino on, Ben.
Yeah, I owe Dino a lot, to be fair. He, when I went to West Brom and signed for West Brom, he looked after me so well. So, so well. I love Dino.
Do you know what I mean? So he was played a huge part in my career at that stage. So I don't know. You choose any of those guys. I can't. I can't do it, Tom.
I think we're fair enough with... let's stick with Tebow and Gigi, Donnarumma, yeah?
We'll go for that. We can't pick
That's fair enough, isn't it? Idol growing up.
Oliver Kahn.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's good.
Any phobias? No.
Don't like snakes. But
yeah, that's standard, isn't it?
That's standard, yeah.
Secret talents. I know you've got one.
I can speak a few languages.
Oh, how many?
Four fluently.
Give us the four.
What's the four, yeah?
Bosnian, English, German, Italian, a little bit of French.
Yeah, that's a skill. That's
I lived all over the world, mate, so that's, that helps. That helps.
That's incredible. We barely speak English, can we?
You speak for yourself, mate. Finally, if you could live a day in the life of anybody else, anybody, think presidents, think movie stars, think anything, anybody, who would that person be?
Oh, man.
That's a good one. It's a good one.
That's a good, good question. I'd go for Tiger Woods.
Oh, just to feel that swing.
Oh.
Your knees are shot. What a life.
I've read his books and said, what a life, this guy.
Yeah.
Tiger. Colorful.
Do you know what I think I'd do? I'd go be president.
I don't know. I'm not sure I like being president.
Only for a day. I just want to find out all the like classified stuff that
people Area 50.
I want to know about.
But you probably have to sign an NDA.
At least I'd know. I'd just go and ask that question straight away. Yeah. Is this legit? Yeah?
So Tiger was mentioned, and this wasn't one, but it's one we have to ask. Who's the greatest sportsman of all time? Sportsperson of all time? Because I wanted to bring in a question on the podcast, which is the Mount Rushmore, which is four, isn't it?
Yeah.
But let's just go with the greatest sportsman. I'm putting it out there that Tiger is for me.
Oh, my God. That's actually impossible. You can go Michael Jordan, but then I think LeBron James, Tom Brady.
I say he might retire now.
Muhammad Ali,
Michael LeBron,
Phelps. Yeah.
He's not retiring until he plays with his lad.
That's the chat.
He mentioned it, but yeah. Yeah, I'll go with Tiger Woods. Listen, I think broke a lot of barriers, didn't he?
I'll take a Tiger Woods. Yeah. I don't think you can really argue against it.
I don't think you can argue.
Yeah, you could, but
you could. Yeah, but still, like, you've got a point.
Listen, with him, he's had his problems.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's and he's come back. Demons, injuries, domestic problems. He's like an imperfect, perfect human.
But now he's like their dad as well, isn't he? You see him with them all. He's like their dad. And that's the nice bit about it. It's like it's full circle.
You've seen all those TaylorMade videos with him chatting to like Colin.
Yeah, the boys, Colin like showing him and that. It's class, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, brilliant.
Azamir Begovic, you are the man. Honestly, thank you so much for coming down. We really enjoyed that. I hope you guys did it at home
too.
What a guy, eh? He's like handsome, he's tall, he speaks well, fluent in frigging loads of languages. Up the Fozcast.
Up the Fozcast.
Oh, up the Fozcast.
Well done, mate. Well done.
Thanks, everybody, for watching. We hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the Fozcast. Don't forget to give us a follow on Spotify. Up the Fozcast.